You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
No, ladies and gentlemen, no. It's not a continuation of last week's incredible Valentine's Day show with all those wonderful ladies. That was a fun novelty program. This evening, in fact, we are back to brass-knuckle, hard-ball, smash-mouth commentary on current events and the headlines
of the week.
In other words,
business as usual.
And business as usual with Keith Alexander back. Keith had the night off last week. He was catting around on Valentine's Day. It was ladies' night, so Keith was out and about. And then, of course, the week before, he had to go down to a funeral, so we only had him for a few minutes. So it is great to be back at full strength and back to the standard TPC show. But that was Popsicles and Icicles by the Mermaids, 1963, right before the British invasion, in honor of the peculiar weather we've been having this week in the South, the biggest deluge of snow, a foot of snow over two separate winter storms of the last week, and it is every bit of a foot. It has been a winter wonderland. It's brought the South down to a crawl. We'll be talking about that. But I'm James Edwards. He's Keith Alexander. It is Saturday evening.
I saw the icicles, but not the popsicles. Right?
Well, I'll tell you this, though. I have not wasted a moment of it. Snow has been on the ground here for a full week now, nearly a full week. And we have been out in it every day. My wife and I and our children, we have been out. We've been doing snow angels, snowball fights, building snowmen, sledding. Every single day I've spent 2 or 3 hours out in the snow because it is so rare. Maybe once a year, on average, you get a dusting of snow enough to go out and walk around in it, but not anything like this. And so we've had a great time. So for us, it's been a lot of fun. But for a lot of our listeners, and we have a lot of listeners down in Texas, not so much fun in Texas. And that's actually the first thing we want to talk about tonight. Brad Griffin will be on with us in the second hour as our featured guest to break down some encouraging news. Folks, we've got a major white pill for you. What's the current mindset of Trump voters, and what does the future look like for the Republican Party? The answers may surprise you, according to a recent poll. We touched on this last week just for a moment before the ladies came on, but tonight we're going to do a deep dive on that question with Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent. That's coming up in the second hour. We're going to talk about Rush Limbaugh's legacy, the impeachment farce. We're going to get there. We're going to catch up on 2 weeks of news, but first, the weather. I think, Keith, it goes to show how fragile this entire system we have truly is, and they especially saw it in Texas.
And let me say this before we leave the subject. I'm surely glad that you got out with your family and your children in particular and made snowmen and sledded and, you know, did all sorts of other various and sundry things that little kids love to do in the snow. You're talking about how rare this is. I've lived in Memphis virtually all my life. The last time I remember a solid week of temperatures below 20 and this much snowfall, I was 12 years old. And so, you know, if you miss this opportunity to go out with your children in the snow in Memphis or in Texas and other places like that, you probably won't get another chance like this in their childhood. So by all means, make the most of it.
That's why we couldn't let the opportunity pass, and we had a great time. And it's a lot of memories, a lot of pictures we took. But now, again, though, for the people in Texas, it wasn't just fun and games. It was far more dire, and they very nearly lost the entire grid. I mean, we know about the rolling blackouts, brownouts. We know about the devastation, but they I think, again, Keith, it shows that the system is fragile. If a snowstorm can bring a country down to a crawl like America, what would a true insurrection do to this country? And I'm not talking about the tourist revolt we saw on January 6th.
What I'm talking about, I think this is the grid is related to our political debacle that we're involved in right now with moving away to green energy, away from fossil fuels. And you can see that we don't have enough experience with this green energy, and it has all sorts of shortcomings that, unfortunately, the left is not willing to own. They won't say that the grid was vulnerable because it was they moved it away in Texas from a fossil fuel-based grid to a green energy grid. All of these windmills, for example, froze up that were supposed to be generating turbine power. And as a result, people didn't have heat, and they had temperatures down below zero. And as a result of all of that, some people have died. Some people have had great hardships. No telling what the health consequences of all of this will be. And this is why we need to assert our common sense. What people ask you now that we've lost the election, it was obviously voter fraud, electoral fraud is the reason that Trump lost. Period. End of discussion, end of sentence, okay? And because of that, we need to know, we also, you know, that they're ramping up, they're in a frenzy of executive orders trying to make all the changes that they want. That, for example, before they may have thought they were going to gradually ease into them over 20 years, they want them right now to be the law of the land. And they now know that electoral fraud works. It can't be stopped. The Supreme Court will not act on behalf of conservative interests when something as egregious as this voter fraud goes on. On the other hand, if the left had lost this election and was claiming that and had the proof that the right has now about voter fraud, they claimed it in 2016, but they didn't have the substantiation that we have now. But if they did, I guarantee you they would have acted in a thrice. They would have basically shut down everything. They would have had a trial. They would have rushed to judgment against the conservatives. But see, it just shows the double standard and the hypocrisy we have. And what we need to do about the grid, Texas is the home of fossil fuels in America. 70% of the refinery capacity for the entire United States is within 100 miles of Houston, Texas. I would love to see the governor of Houston, Texas, and there's been some rumblings to this effect, to say, to heck with you, Federal Energy Commission and other federal agencies, we're going to have our grid based on fossil fuels, coal, petroleum, propane, diesel, whatever. And we're just not going to abide by it, and let's have a showdown about it, because you know now that if you go the green energy route, it's a disaster.
Well, folks, we are most certainly thinking about our listeners and friends in Texas. I know it was devastating down there. We had a good time with it. We didn't lose power. We did have a pipe freeze, but what are you going to do? You got to pay the price for having fun with the snow.
I wish I just had one.
We'll be right back, folks. We're just getting started tonight. We got a lot more coming your way.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, and we are back. We have got a busy show tonight. Again, we're making up for 2 weeks of news and current events. Going to have some good news for you tonight. Yes, indeed, you did hear me correctly. We are going to have some good news for you tonight and some things you're really going to want to ponder over. That's going to be coming up with Brad Griffin. He's going to be reporting on the findings of a recent poll that I think will pleasantly surprise you. But I got to say one more thing about the snow and the impact of the snow. You remember back in December and January, we were griping that it was taking the Postal Service a month, 30 days in some cases, to deliver some books people had ordered. We sent them priority mail. We paid a premium to send them priority mail. That's guaranteed 2 to 3 day delivery, or not guaranteed, but expected 2 to 3 day delivery. Obviously not guaranteed. But now the Postal Service has not run in a week here. Nor has garbage service. And you say, well, you know, we had this epic storm, this historical storm. Yeah, but you know what? I got out and drove in it every day. Yes, the roads were icy. Yes, you might slip a little bit. And certainly you wouldn't advise truckers to get out and go on long hauls at 70 miles an hour. But navigating neighborhood streets going 1 mile an hour from box to box like a postal truck might do, I don't think it's been bad enough for the post office to be shut down for an entire week. I mean, not a piece of mail has been, yeah, right. Sam came into my, I've actually got the quote right here, and here it is. Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of nights stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. Well, I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, with every degree of certainty, that is totally bogus. Been a solid week since a piece of mail has hit my box.
Well, what this is indicative of, Sam and James, is a culture shift in America. That was the motto of the post office in the old first world white America. Now, the new third world post office, which in most places in America is a haven for minorities, particularly blacks, they love those jobs. They're going to tell us that that's no longer the way. You're going to have to adapt to our way, which is, if it's not comfortable, we're not going to do it. We're going to sit back. We're not going to put our health or our lives at jeopardy. And furthermore, we're not going to exert ourselves. We're going to do it our way, and you don't have any choice about it because we've got a very strong union, and you're stuck with us.
There it is.
So consequently, that's why we have the postal delivery problems that we've had here in Memphis.
And ditto for the garbage man, too, by the way.
Oh, the garbage men haven't shown up in 2 weeks. Yeah. And no apologies to the public at all. No efforts.
Did we get a prorated, 25% off?
Well, look, let's say that it was a white landlord that had not provided services for his tenants. The local TV station would be out there shoving microphones in front of their face saying, "Why are you such racist?" On the other hand, if we complain about the garbage pickup or the postal service, it's crickets out there. Nobody in the news media is going to get involved and, because that might be anti-black, and that would be horrible. We can't do that. We can't criticize any behavior if it is, and if it's, for example, if it plays on the traits of black people, like I don't want to exert myself in this bad weather, I'm not going to do it. And if you make them do it and say that's the standard, guess what? Bingo, that's systemic racism.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We never want to miss an opportunity to gripe about government service, and so there it is. But I'll tell you, when it was taking them a month to deliver a piece of mail back in January and February, those were the halcyon days compared to the fact that they're
had problems with the Postal Service in the Christmas season that just passed by. For example, I bought some sheets recently from Mike Lindell in MyPillow. I've tried to give them a lot of business since, they came. The left has come out after him. And because of that, he told me you can have regular delivery free, but that's with the post office. So I would take 2 or 3 weeks. For $25, we can get it to you tomorrow with Amazon or with FedEx.
I saw UPS. I'll tell you, but this is actually interesting. I saw a UPS truck rolling through the neighborhood today. UPS, FedEx. They're working, but the USPS, not so much.
But the U.S. Postal Service, forget about it.
Anyway. All right, listen, I got to get to this. This is very interesting. I got an email from a listener a couple of weeks ago. And, I'll read it to you. "Dear James, I'm writing because I spent the last couple of years rescuing a very important book from the memory hole. And just a few minutes ago, I finished converting all 245 scanned pages into a PDF file. I learned about this book from the political cesspool, from your interview. The book is called Another View of the Civil Rights Movement by Officer Drew Lackey, the cop who booked Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. He was not impressed with the civil rights movement, and the parallels between what went on then and the modern BLM riots are staggering. Upon Officer Lackey's death, his book fell out of publication. For years, I tried to get a copy online and failed. There were two copies in two different libraries in Alabama, and I contemplated flying out there so I could scan the pages at a local print shop. Eventually, a used copy popped up on Amazon for $90, and I seized upon it immediately. I spent the last couple of years scanning every page of the book in my spare time. At long last, I quit slacking off and finished scanning the book today. I just finished converting the whole thing to a PDF file, and he sent me the link." But this is where the plot thickens, ladies and gentlemen. This intrepid listener also submitted the book as an idea to a publishing company, and the publishing company is going to reprint this book and get it back into circulation. In fact, the publishing company even emailed me in an attempt to track down the heirs of Drew Lackey, his children, to get permission to reprint the book. So this book is going to be reprinted as a result of our interview and as a result of an enterprising listener going through the extra efforts to track this book down, scan it, save it for posterity, then contact a publishing company, and now it's going to be reprinted. Folks, it goes to show, Keith, the residual effect of what we do here on the radio and the interviews that we bring forth. You never know where they're going to land and what good they're going to do. This is an amazing story.
This is like finding King Tut's tomb, if you want to know the truth. This is what we do. We provide a venue for people that are not going to be interviewed anywhere else. When have you heard of an interview of somebody who was a proponent of the old guard during the civil rights era? None of them. You don't hear anything from George Wallace's family. You don't hear anything from Tuck Patterson.
By the way, I'm sorry for the interruption, Keith, but of course you'll remember we also interviewed George Wallace Jr. on this program.
Absolutely.
So
see,
here you will hear from those people.
See, if it weren't for our efforts and the efforts of a few other very, you know, very unknown people, basically this stuff would go down the memory hole, which is exactly where the left wants it to go. But on the other hand, when you read Drew Lackey's book from the vantage point of a true Southerner who supported segregation back then and was part of, he did his duty. He did what he was supposed to do. He did, without fear or favor or without one-sidedness in any way. But we got an insider's view of Rosa Parks, and he was the first one to tell everybody the whole thing was cooked up. It was a plot. It was a plan. It was a strategy.
And this
it's what they call in legal malpractice terms, barratry. They were basically making litigation, and they were using the courts to change laws in ways that they could not get the legislature to do. And setting up litigation, something to be litigated, is called barratry. For example, if somebody... two people, one person is driving a car in front and another person is behind him, and they have it prearranged that the guy in front is going to slam on his brakes and the other car runs into it, and they make a insurance claim about the so-called or the supposed injuries of the guy in the front car. That's a classic case of barratry. On the other hand, what Rosa Parks and the NAACP did with the arrest in the what led to the Montgomery bus boycott, that's just as much barratry as that first example I gave you.
And again, Drew Lackey wasn't just a dissident who happened to be alive in Alabama during the civil rights era. He was the chief of police in Montgomery, Alabama. I mean, the epicenter of the whole damn thing. And we have that interview for posterity. We actually captured it and put it on
because
CD.
Of that,
hey,
now
we
got
go. We're going to talk about this more when we come back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
President Biden approved a federal disaster declaration for Texas, getting some much-needed help to the state as it recovers from one of the worst winter storms to hit the Lone Star State in years. According to a statement from the White House, the declaration will provide assistance to individuals who sustained losses due to disasters and offer help in repairing public facilities and infrastructure. Texas Governor Greg Abbott thanked the president for the declaration, calling it a first step. In a release, the governor said the president's order only provides assistance for 77 of the state's 254 counties. And an engine failure aboard a 777 aircraft taking off from Denver International Airport Saturday sent large chunks of debris raining down on parts of northwest Denver. A United Airlines flight bound for Honolulu reported engine trouble and returned to Denver shortly after takeoff, scattering debris over several neighborhoods in the process. The plane landed safely, and no injuries have been reported on the ground. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy points, and availability vary by state.
As Texas continues to struggle following this week's winter storms, the state's farmers are trying to find ways to deal with the damage that they suffered. Texas Agricultural Commissioner Sid Miller tells Fox News that Texas farmers are resilient, but the storm hit them particularly hard.
Our farmers really took it hard, you know, pouring out milk. You don't get a lower price than zero on your milk, except you actually, it's a hazard, so you have to pay somebody to, you know, to get rid of it. But we've lost, the chicken houses went down, the hatcheries, the little chicks froze to death, the incubators, they were cut off heat there, so those eggs won't hatch. And another problem we're still having, since we're not going to have the gas back on till Tuesday, are feed mills. Can't generate any, make any feed batches. So our dairies are out of feed. Right. Chicken houses are running out of feed. Feed lots, you know, equine facilities. I've got my people out. We're working real hard, you know, to find feed and hay.
This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
So I found a lot of interest in this particular email. So as a result of our work, you know, actually, I don't know how many of you know this, but I actually shared the stage with Drew Lackey at an event some years ago in Alabama. We were both speakers at a particular conference, had the opportunity to meet him there. That's what led to his eventual appearance on the Political Cesspool. This was the guy who's pictured in that iconic photograph fingerprinting Rosa Parks after her arrest in this very staged stunt that she pulled on the bus. It was completely staged. Well, Drew Lackey knew all of that. Now, he was the chief of police in Montgomery, Alabama. He knew what was going on, and he told us. He gave us that eyewitness testimony from a position of authority on this program. We have actually made CDs of that particular interview and sent them out as fundraising incentives. And so, you know, you could say, well, that's his opinion. That's his version of the truth. You're right. I happen to believe with his version of the truth. I happen to agree with it. But let's put his version of the truth and the facts that he brings to the table versus their version of the truth and let the people decide. Well, that is something that the establishment media and even so-called conservative media, Keith, and we're about to get into Rush Limbaugh's passing this week and his legacy, they would never touch that. They would never interview a guy like Drew Lackey.
Well, you'd never find anybody that would own that viewpoint. See, the viewpoints of people like Drew Lackey and other people.
We own it here. We own it here. We own the truth.
We are the friends of the friendless, folks. We're the people that will, we're the people that will come forward and provide these people with a platform where they can get their side of the story across.
And I had the opportunity, now, Keith, I'm sorry, I had the opportunity to meet him. We had the opportunity, of course, to talk to him on the radio. Salt of the earth, an every man, a good man by any standard of measurement. This man was a hero. This man tried. He was truly a law and order guy. This was a good man. He wasn't a bad guy.
Not at all. He was, look, he was a man that would populate these westerns by John Wayne and Randolph Scott and Audie Murphy back in the 50s. He was a law enforcement man, honest as the day is long, and unbiased in his enforcement of the law. Of course, he was portrayed, remember the Southern Sheriff in the Dodge commercial, you in a heap of trouble, boy, and everything. He was the exact opposite of that. That was a caricature that the left created. But see, what this shows you about what happened, compare this. Drew Lackey's story is forgotten. His relatives are neglected. Nobody knows what's happening. On the other hand, look at Susan Rosenberg, one of these Jewish radicals, hippie people, SDS members, weatherman, back in the 60s, who bombed the Capitol. Okay, I think it was in the 70s that they did it. They bombed the Capitol, which created a lot more damage than what happened on January the 6th of 2021, by far. Well, guess where she is now? She was sentenced to a long sentence in jail for her part in bombing the Capitol. Now, she went to jail. Clinton, President Clinton, pardoned her, and now she is the head of fundraising for Black Lives Matter. Okay, she is like Kathy Bowden, the same thing. She was one of the people that killed those Brinks guards with the SDS weatherman. Well, her father was one of the founders, a Jewish guy, founder of what they call the National Lawyers Guild in the 1920s. She has a brother who was appointed by none other than George W. Bush to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. She got out of jail, and she, again, has some cush job with the leftist fundraising NGO hierarchy. Do you think anybody, any of Drew Lackey's ancestors, any of somebody like our good friends, look, they aren't good friends, but let's say somebody like Bobby Frank Cherry or whatnot that was one of the people that went through, that was accused of the bombing of the 16th Street church, that killed four little church girls, black church girls, in 1964. okay? You know, you don't see them landing on their feet. You don't see them in charge of, you know, pulling down six-figure salaries for NGOs, okay? Who knows what's happening to them? But see, this is, and that's what we've learned more than anything else from the last few months. That's why I didn't go to January the 6th, 2021 rally, even though I was encouraged to do it. On the other hand, I didn't go to Charlottesville either because I knew there would be a double standard. Imagine what would have happened in the civil rights movement if the people that marched at Selma or the people that marched in Memphis and Birmingham and stuff like this had had the FBI come down on them, chase them down, prosecute them, try to put them in jail for 15 years. We would never have had a civil rights movement. But on the other hand, that's the way they treat white people trying to peacefully protest for their rights.
Keith, you're right about that, and of course that's what we're here to talk about and bring truth to power towards. But I want to say again, I want to thank the listener who took our work here on the radio, this interview, and ran with it and copied the book, put it up on a PDF, and took it to a publisher, and it's now going to be republished. He picked up where we left off, and that's a wonderful, wonderful story. But why are we doing all the heavy lifting? Here's Rush Limbaugh. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but Rush Limbaugh knew he was a dead man for more than a year, and he was wealthy enough, $500 million is what I've read, to have bowed out in a nose-thumbing blaze of glorious truth-telling about this, about what we're talking about the true power brokers in American politics and that of the world. But instead, he pretended not to know that awful truth for up to the bitter end. And what a missed opportunity of redemption for him and salvation for us. Limbaugh had a massive following of engaged whites ripe for the turning. He could have been the catalyst for a game-changing fight back. But no, Rush will be remembered, if at all, as a wisecracking, cigar-chomping lightweight. He mentioned the Jewish lobby in the 80s, and then he was giving it a talking to, and he never mentioned the Jewish lobby again. He never once again even approached that third rail, much less touched it. But why wasn't Rush Limbaugh interviewing people like Drew Lackey, even in a nuanced way? He could have had him on and not agreed or disagreed, but just let him tell his story. As one of the people who follow me on Twitter wrote, Rush could have at least dog whistled occasionally that he understood the true landscape of the media in a Buchanan-esque way, or promoted guests who had demonstrated that they held views that were to the right of the establishment GOP. As our good friend Rich up in Nashville writes, Rush was never one of us, though. He always sucked up to the Republican Party, so much so that I had to quit listening to him after W got elected. He never said anything good about the South or its history that I recall. He was amusing only when attached to the Clintons. Sad that he's dead, but it will not change anything in my life. But I know people who hung on his every word. Now, to me, I would say Rush was certainly better than most in the establishment media. But the fact remains, Keith, at what point do you have enough comfort and security that you can tell the whole truth, the unadulterated truth that we tell here at TPC, even though we have never had a dollar's worth of slack in terms of our financial standing? We live off the land. We're quarter to quarter every year for 16 years, 16 and a half years now. It'll be 17 years in October if we can make it. But, you know, after $1 million, after $100 million, maybe $500 million, could Rush have not at least given us the last show of his career to say, listen, you've given me $500 million, and I'm going to give you one show of truth, and here it is, and here's the guest. Why didn't he ever have a Jared Taylor or a Peter Brimelow or a James Edwards or a Keith Alexander? Never did he. CNN had me on multiple times. Rush Limbaugh never had anybody like that on, Keith. And for that, I say he was better than most, but he was a damn sight short of where he should have been, especially after he amassed that fortune. He would take you to the 50-yard line. He'd never take you to the end zone.
Well, you're right.
Am I too rough on him? I mean, I know he just passed, and that's sad, but is it too much? I mean, it's not like he was, you know, a hardcore leftist enemy. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a lot of the people that...
I think he was in sympathy with people like us, but he knew that it was a third rail, and quite frankly, it doesn't matter if you try to sugarcoat it. The voltage on that third rail is still the same, and you'll be incinerated. Now, if he had come out, let's say, in the last year of his life, and said things that we would like him to say, I guarantee he wouldn't have gotten that Presidential Medal of Honor. He wouldn't have gone out as this, sage old man of American conservatism, which is the way he's being portrayed in the news media now. He would be, aha, he was a racist after all. See, this is the problem that we've got. We do have two-third rails, and we're one of the few media outlets that will touch them, race and Jewish power and influence. Now, just let me say this. We're at a watershed moment in American history with the defeat of Trump and the death of Rush Limbaugh. Where do we go from here? Well, the main thing we've got to do is whoever winds up leading our movement has got to not have the shortcomings of Trump or Rush Limbaugh. He's going to have to mention race and Jewish power and influence. You can't defeat an enemy you can't identify. For example, I don't think the Union Army would have won the Civil War if they thought they were fighting the Mexicans or the Eskimos, okay? If they said they were fighting the evil empire or this secret elite or something like this. People, you mention stuff like that and think the people out here in America and the great unwashed masses are going to figure out who you're talking about. They're going to think you're talking about Martians or something. You've got to be able to identify the enemy. And quite frankly, no one who won't do that, if they don't do it, they're undeserving of leading this movement.
I'll say it right now. Give me Sam Bushman over Rush Limbaugh any day. Better talent, more honor, more integrity. The only thing Rush has over Sam is the bank account.
And his weight.
I'll be right back.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje, the strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Rush Limbaugh, look, I'm sad. Look, he did better than most, but all this lauding and $500 million he amassed, I don't even know if he had a guy like Pat Buchanan on. Even Pat Buchanan, you know, finds a home here at TPC, but I don't know how many times he even had a guy like that, much less the people that we regularly feature. And it's just,
well, he did have good things to say about Pat from time to time, but you're right. He went to the wrong people. He didn't listen to the true, authentic voices of Middle America, who he presumed to represent. And we've got to have people that will do that. We can't have it. He wasn't Ben Shapiro, but, for example, who's going to take his place? Heaven forbid it's somebody like a Ben Shapiro.
Mark Levin. Or
any of these people, you know, that...
it ain't going to be us, I'll tell you that.
Well, people that are in the tank for the civil rights movement. See, that's what happened. The difference between the success of those civil rights marches and protests that are so legendary, Selma, Birmingham, Memphis.
Well, hang on. How many times did Rush even say, you know what, that's probably not the way you think it is? How many times did he say, you know, here's Drew Lackey?
Even Trump said that at Charlottesville. He said there are some very good people on both sides.
But how many times did Rush say the civil rights movement is not what you think it to be?
Not at all.
It was the modern day equivalent. It was the, or rather, the historical equivalent of BLM. Which is what it was. And that's what our guy who got this book republished from Drew Lackey exactly said. He said the parallels between that era and BLM are staggering, and they are. It's the exact same play.
Well, see, the civil rights movement was just like so many other things, like BLM. It was focused entirely on black people and black people who are full of grievances, okay? Nothing positive to offer to justify their presence in America. They never came out and said, you know, we have something in common and you need to have us involved so America can achieve its greatness. No, they didn't do that. They weren't like Booker T. Washington. They were more like W.E. Du Bois, and they projected all of their losses, all of their shortcomings on the white part of the population in America. And they would never have made the success that they had if it had not been for the fact that they were backed by Jewish power and influence. So Jewish power and influence owned the legacy media back there, and if they had not fawned over the black civil rights movement, if they had treated the black civil rights movement the way they're treating the white civil rights movement, represented by things like the January the 6th, 2021 protest in Washington, D.C., or the protest in Charlottesville in 2017, guess what? It never would have gone anywhere.
You know what? Charlottesville was a walk in the park to the garden variety carnage that the so-called civil rights movement, we call it the Swindle Whites movement, you know, that was a garden variety day in the park for them. Anyway, we got to segue here. We only have one segment left, and then we got to get to Brad Griffin, who's actually going to have some good news for you. So stay tuned for that. But I got this email in, Keith, just a couple of days ago as well from a gentleman, and he is an author, a scholar. He's received his PhD. He's up in New York State. This is what he has to write: Dear James, thank you for the kind words you wrote in signing my copy of your excellent book. I think your book is perfect for the current circumstances, which I consider optimal for achieving our goals. If Trump's victory had been implemented, many of his supporters may have thought that the battle had been won, and he's talking about the victory or the proposed attempt to
correct the election.
Correct. Instead, have just begun. Now we have 75 million angry Trumpers seeking an explanation about what happened and what can be done to correct things. The fundamental underlying racial realities are gaining acceptance. And we're going to be talking about this. The reason I'm reading this interview, or rather reading this email, is because you're going to be hearing more about this in our interview with Brad Griffin in just a moment.
It's like it's prophetic.
The fundamental underlying racial realities are gaining acceptance thanks, in some degree, to the Democrat war against white America. I think that your book is the perfect guide to help whites graduate from Trumpism to white survivalism. I was very happy to listen to three of my old friends on your show recently when you had Jared Taylor, Mark Weber, and Paul Fromm discuss current events. I also enjoyed your segment with Lauren Witzke. More important than making America great again, Trump's defiance of the anti-white establishment has given white people hope and fortitude again. Keep up the great work, James. And that comes from a scholar, a PhD recipient up in New York State. And he is so right. He is so, so very right about the fact that whites are beginning to realize the fundamental underlying racial realities. And we're going to get to the poll results that prove that. Now, you know as well as I do, Keith, we don't necessarily agree with most polls. In fact, we disagree with most. But if you find a poll that confirms what you believe to be true and, in fact, even accelerates it, that's probably a poll that they're inadvertently being honest about. And we're going to break it down all with Brad in the next segment. But that was a fine email, to be sure.
Well, let me just say this about that.
We've been right about everything, by the way. He mentioned the book. Yeah, we were right about it 10 years ago when I wrote the book. Yeah, we're right about it now.
Quite frankly, we have been on the beam. We have been on the beam all through the career of this show for the 14, 15, 16 years that we've been on the air. And the reason we continue to be here when other people have fallen to the wayside is because our instincts were good. We knew that race was going to be the primary dividing line that the left was going to rely on for their culture war. Their culture war keeps everybody stirred up, keeps the masses interested in fighting the fight, the bad fight of being against the white race. But we knew they were going to choose that. And conservatives like Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, and Sean Hannity, they still can't come to terms with that. They still, I mean, when they try to say white survival or say
no, they won't say it. They won't say it. Rush never said it. Rush never mentioned, like Trump, by the way, never mentioned whites. Never mentioned his entire constituency. I guarantee you, Rush's listener base, 99.5% white. He would never mention their name, though, nor would Trump. But we will, and we will champion you, and we will lead you.
Well, Trump in his naivety occasionally would flirt around with it, like his comments at Charlottesville.
No, he did, and I appreciate Trump. Listen, I like
But he did it by mistake because he didn't know that it was a third rail. When he got that big electric shock, he did, and he dropped it.
And he did the stuff, too, Keith, where he would defend the Confederate. Look, he said a lot of things, the Confederate Army bases. He said a lot of things that resonates with us, and he was I loved his rhetoric. But he would never say when he would go on his litany of what he's going to do for this group, that group, and another group, he would mention gays, he would mention blacks, he would mention everybody. He would not mention, here's what I'm going to do for whites. No, he would never
But on the other hand, he would never make Black Lives Matter a terrorist organization. He said that Antifa was because that might probably has some white people in it. But then on the other hand, Black Lives Matter, oh, heaven forbid, no, they're righteous and holy because the word black is part of their name. Well, that's where we have to move beyond now. We have to realize that basically the left misrepresents themselves. They pretend to be benevolent. The civil rights movement wasn't for the benefit of black people. It was working against the interests of white people. The feminist movement was not pro-woman. It was anti-male. Likewise, the homosexual rights movement was not pro-homosexual, it was anti-heterosexual. The sooner that the average Joe and Jane in America realize that's what's behind all this leftism, there's no benevolence there at all. Jewish power and influence does not operate from benevolence. They are after the hides of their enemies, whoever their enemies may be. And just look at the way they've tracked down these poor hapless guys that may have been a guard at Treblinka or something like that. You know, some 95.
There was a new story in the news just a couple of days ago, a 100-year-old guy that was tracked down.
Yeah, and they're going to haul him off to Israel, have a Stalinist show trial, and throw him in jail for the rest of his life. Just like they did Edgar Ray killing and these people in the civil rights movement. They tracked them down.
How many times did Killen beat the rap?
Yeah, 7 times, but they got him for the 8th time, and now he's in jail, or he died in jail. See, what they're doing is they're wanting to make a point, and it's such a Jewish theme that it needs to be brought out. It's always Jewish themes doing this. That's the way they operate. They want you to know that nobody bucks the revolution and gets away with it. That's why they are relentless in tracking down people that they think are on the so-called wrong side of history. They'll continue to do that. And, you know, that's why, that's the proof in the pudding. That shows you that they are not motivated by benevolence to black people. They are moved by malevolence towards white people.
You know, it's interesting, though, you mentioned Edgar Ray Killen. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, James Woods, who has become so maligned for being a conservative Hollywood guy, played Edgar Ray Killen in the movie Mississippi Burning, and you should check that out. You should check out his performance in that. A couple of more letters that came in. The Copperhead of Easton, Massachusetts. Now, this is not our Copperhead. It's not Matt the Copperhead. This is the Copperhead from Easton, Massachusetts. Great show. Keep up the work. Now, we get this letter from the Easton, Massachusetts Copperhead a few times a year, and he always sends a contribution with it. And I would love a Copperhead of Easton, Massachusetts to send you some gifts in return, but we don't have his mailing address. So if you want to send us your mailing address very discreetly, very privately, we'd love to send you a token of our appreciation. If you can't do that, just keep sending us letters and keep sending us support. We love you and we're with you. And here is one that came in. Hello, James. Thank you and Keith and your guests for all you do and continue to do. Can you please say a few words about Olaf Childress and the First Freedom? To me, he sure did a lot. And how? I first noticed your work in the First Freedom. I sure miss him and the First Freedom. It seems as if TPC soldiers on to a point in his memory. Well, you're so right. That's from Steve in Baltimore. Olaf Childress published a newspaper out of Silver Hill, Alabama, called The First Freedom, and he always promoted our work. Olaf Childress has gone on to receive another his eternal reward.
Valhalla. He's gone on to Valhalla. Well, for
probably heaven. But right anyway, hey, Olaf was a great guy. Network. I knew him. I loved him. He was a great man, and we need more men like him. To you, Olaf.